require doctor to call an advisor. On my left is Jerry Bolsina, committee secretary.
Honourable Anne.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Patricia Adams and I represent the AFC in the Portfolio Committee of Tourism.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and members and the department. I'm Manuel Masehela, a member of the committee representing the African National Congress from Limpopo Province. Thank you.
Good morning, James Force from the Western Cape, the Gay Spokesperson on Tourism.
Good morning, Chair, board members and staff, team from Potentum, Rafa Lovaku, from KZN, President of IP. Thank you.
Good morning, so my name is Natasha Rotten from the Office of the Deputy Minister of Tourism.
Good morning, I'm Nancy Peterson, I'm the Secretary to the World.
Good morning, everybody. It's Mao Hussein from PNG.
Good morning, members. I'm Peter from the Director General's Office. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Renee Sambula. I'm Chief of Staff in the Ministry of Tourism.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Thabo Makhubele. I'm the Director General of the DG.
Good morning, all. I'm Melanie Titus, Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Office of the Minister.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Ms. Nongkabela Tululan, Chief Director of Research and Knowledge Management from the Department.
My name is Honourable Members. I'm Ms. Nongkabela and I'm the Assistant for the Committee. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Nongkabela Mbengu. I'm the Acting CFO in the Department of Tourism.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. So, firstly, an apology from the Minister and the Deputy Minister. Unfortunately, could not join us. I am Victor Tarke, the Director General of the Department.
Good morning, Honourable Members and colleagues. My name is Moroma Rampele in the Department of Tourism.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Shana Chetier and I am responsible for policy and knowledge services in the Department.
Good morning, Honourable Members. I am Anemi Malan and I'm responsible for international tourism development in the Department.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Members. I'm Ralph Ackerman, I'm the Chief Financial Officer.
Terry, any apologies? Chair, I have three apologies in front of me, Chair. One from Honourable Makhubele Mashele, two Honourable Whitfield, and three from Honourable Makhubele. Those two members will not be able to attend the committee meeting today. Thank you. Thank you. I'm sure the others will be coming. We are getting a presentation of the APT strategic plan from the department. And I really would like the department to give us information on the budget, especially new allocations for transport, which is 14.1, to tell us about the human resource strategy implementation and budget cuts, the vacancy rate, business principles, planning for projects, projects not implemented in 2015, a 16 financial year, tourism incentive program, tell us about it in total, extended public works program and social responsibility implementation project, training program, tourism enterprise partnership program, and support to rural enterprises. We would really like a department to address that in the Australian and APP. Thank you very much. Over to you, DG and your team.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Minister. I mean, Honourable Members. We've got a full team here that will also take you program by program. I will go through the overview of the strategy. Second note of the issues that Honourable Chair has highlighted. So we'll take those into account in the main, which we're actually going to do in the briefing, so that we reflect a little bit more. I will rather reflect on some of them compared to the introduction. But, Chairman, allow me to introduce Ms. Chetty properly. The last time we did inform the committee that we are in the process of recruitment for DDG. It was DDG for Quality and Knowledge Services as well as DDG for COO, DDG Corporate Affairs. We unfortunately could not get a suitable candidate out of the process for the Corporate Affairs, so we are back into the process again to try and find candidates. But fortunately, we did find the chair here for this particular one. She comes from Gauteng. She's been with Tourism for a very, very long time, so it's not a new person in this space. It's a person that has been working on tourism for a considerable lengthy time. She's practically as old as the month of that person in the department. So she's going through a learning process in terms of how we do things and the environment and so on. But ultimately, we have no doubt that she did hit the ground running, and she will have to demonstrate that. So you will be the judges in terms of that. We went through a process of change, a process of change in terms of the strategic plan in particular, where the previous strategic plan that we had tabled, we went through a very in-depth review. And this review that we undertook practically gave us a whole new strategy, if one could put it that way. And as we go through the things that we are going to be dealing with in the coming years, over the next 5 years, the committee will be able to see that there is a marked shift on some of the things that we used to do before. There is a lot more harmonization in terms of what we do and what African tourism does. So that's one of the issues that would actually surface quite clearly. There's a lot more rationalization of the resources that we've got. We are mindful that ours is just a $2 billion budget and we need to maximize on that. So there's a lot more rationalization that we've got into this, including some of the innovative things that we're bringing in, partnerships that we're bringing in, but these things we're actually going to demonstrate on them. This change is not going to end in honorable chairperson. It's a continuous change. So we reflect now on the strategy, and the changes that have happened to the strategy necessitate a further in-depth look at our structure and whether it is adequately supporting this strategy that is now new. So we also will then be going through that particular process, and as we get to 2017 and going forward, then there would be that level of alignment that one would be a lot more satisfied with. So at this point, we really make use of the current programs to ensure that we get as much value out of these programs as we possibly can. But of course, the realignment process would actually allow us to then make sure that streamlining of all these different programs actually takes place. It does take a bit of time. We would have loved to actually have something like that implemented as immediately as possible. But there are administrative processes and procedures that we must go through the DPSA, through National Treasury and so on, and ultimately then we are able to say this is actually the perfect fit. So there will have a perfect fit, but this is a fit that we believe would actually be able to take us forward. Well, Chairperson, we are still really firmly guided by our pursuit to implement the National Development Plan, the 2030 vision of the country. And when you look at the programs that we've got, you would see that be it what we intend to do with regards to transformation, there will be a very clear link to how we're dealing with issues of inequality from that perspective. Be it the issues that we're dealing with through the EPWP program, and some of the things we're dealing with through the GIP, we'll be able to see issues of dealing with unemployment. You would also be able to see that IPRP in particular, we are also trying to deal with issues of poverty and so on. There is really a very clear alignment to the national vision in terms of what we're actually doing. But coming straight into the department, the vision of the department there, we're still pursuing this leadership for sustainable tourism development for inclusive economic growth in the country. And the reason why we really want to emphasize on this, the inclusivity and growth, these two elements must both be pursued equally. So you will see a lot of that as we go into some of the details and so on. Our mission is underpinned really by good corporate and cooperative governance. I would like to spend a little bit of time on that because for us we believe that it all starts with good governance. If we do things right, if we've got the correct systems, the correct processes, the correct accountability mechanisms, we are actually on the right track to actually then deliver the services that we are actually saying this is what we should render to the government. We talk about strategic partnerships and collaboration that really drive what we do. I don't know, but I think one of the things that we should take note of is that tourism is a mandate of relationships. It is essentially a mandate of relationships. We want to get people to come to South Africa, to South Africans to travel, their country. But the products that they must go to don't necessarily belong to us or them. But we can't sit back and say those things don't belong to us. Because the means that we've got to make sure that product is ready, by the time people go there and they actually visit this place, they find it ready. That is our responsibility. So that's why we will actually demonstrate the partnership that we've got to get into. We hit with environmental affairs, with fair parks, with Sunday, with heritage sites, with art and culture, the list is endless. But we have got to actually work in that field. And also with the provinces in the same process. But other partnerships also relate to outside government, who else can support what we actually do. Honourable members would recall we used to have this partnership with the DED. So if one looks at the strategy, we're still talking about enterprise development, but it's a DED, it's not necessarily DED. What we did was to reflect on this and we said, if we take the relationship with DED, it has produced results, no doubt about that, but we needed to actually open this so that it is done in a competitive manner, so that others could also come into the same space and demonstrate what they are able to do. If it so happens that such a body that we were actually having partnership with is the best in a particular area, so be it. But it is not necessarily that we are going to be continuing with that relationship. As of 31st of March 2016, that was the last time that we actually had that old formal relationship with the new approach that we've taken out of Chairperson is we have actually brought in, we went through a tender process, we wanted to create a panel of suppliers. And these are suppliers in the enterprise development space. Those partnerships will also be with some of the people that are actually coming from those panels. But they will compete then amongst themselves to be able to then demonstrate that one is best in incubation, the other one is best in advisory services, and so the best one in a particular area would then be the one that takes this particular approach. Other partnerships there would talk to issues of destination development and so on and so forth. So those would actually then be some of the things that you would see there. Innovation and knowledge management, you would see as we go into the details that these suggestions of new applications that will actually be brought forth, the suggestions about legal frameworks that will assist us to actually have more and more information. In fact, in this area, Honorable Chairperson, we believe that we have an opportunity to be that first point of call when anyone requires information pertaining to tourism in South Africa, whether they want to start a business, whether they want to know what is where and so on and so forth, whether it's for their own planning or whether it is for them as consumers, we should be able to actually provide that level of information. So there's going to be a lot of work that's going to be done in that. Effective stakeholder communication. What he's saying here is that it is not ideal for us to have a lot of good things that we are doing and a lot of services that we are providing and so on, but people don't know about them. So if they don't know about them, they are not going to come for those services. And as a result, it will actually end up with good, great plans, but they are not necessarily going to be servicing anybody. And that is an area, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, which we are going to upscale quite a lot to make sure that people really know about this. As well as I'm still at that, Chairperson spoke about the SMART principle. I think that is one of the areas that perhaps we should have our communication there. We have this fluid environment, very fluid environment that we operate in. I'll give you examples. When we were concluding the discussions around the IMC on immigration regulations, and there was an agreement that we're going to go the route of accredited travel companies in specific markets, immediately we went into this environment. So if we were planning, we were saying, okay, maybe China will be the first. It necessitated that China might be the first, but we then concluded it before the end of the financial year. And then as we're dealing with that, so we're busy dealing with India, Russia, we're starting to have discussions, and but basically then it gets overtaken by events, Home Affairs, great, they've waived it. So this is the kind of environment we operate in. It changes literally on a daily basis. So it becomes slightly different from other environments where you know for a fact that you've got 25 indigents in a particular district municipality that you should actually pay basic free water or this service or that service, which is so clear. You can go straight into that. So that's why sometimes you would find that we would go into areas where we would indicate it's going to be this 15, it's going to be those 25. The changes that have to happen during the process of implementation, you realize whilst you're because we review this environment on a regular basis. You say we are going to visit these particular two countries, as an example, I'm giving that example. We're going to visit these two countries for purposes of resolving the following issues. Immediately after that, you realize that they are not a priority at all. Two more have emerged, and you necessarily have to actually then deal with those first before you do. So we're more about create the capacity to be able to intervene, as opposed to you fix yourself to this particular one. But I'll give them a little bit of time to explain the SMART principle in a lot more detail, how it works, how Treasury guidelines work with regard to that, and how the documents, as we develop it, takes care of that from the goals, the indicators, the objectives, right up to the target end. Which one needs to be in which way. So I'm going to ask you that you just stick to that aspect and process it.
Thank you. We, obviously, the presentation, good morning, to you and another member. The presentation, obviously, isn't the full document is the actual strategy and a financial performance plan, which is developed in line with the provisions of the framework for management of performance information. As well as the framework for strategic plans and annual performance plans. In doing that, we at regular intervals involve both internal audits and the audit general to assist us in ensuring that we are in full compliance with the provisions of those frameworks, which provide for the SMART principle. In terms of the SMART principles, the framework requires that the targets be SMART, the objectives be an output statement, and then you have an objective statement which expands on an output statement, and it requires that the indicators meet a different principle of relevance, it must be suitable to what you are measuring, and the indicators are not guided by the SMART principle in terms of the framework. So when you read the objectives and you read it in context, it will tell you that I would like to make an example of problem 2, the first indicator there. The first if you can maybe the APT, the objective of accelerating transformation of the tourism sector. The objective statement in the document, in the Excel document of the APT, will expand for you and tell you that what we want to do here specifically is to meet the provisions of the BBBE sector code for the tourism sector. So for us, that is why the auditor general agrees with that is specific enough. And what then happens in terms of measurability, when are we going to do it, what is written out in the 3-year outline that is in the APT. So far, in all our, since 2010-11, when we first audited independently as a Department of Tourism, the Auditor General has agreed that we are in full compliance with all the provisions of those two frameworks I spoke about. I'm aware that earlier in the year, the Auditor General had relevant certain findings in our APP, with particular in relation to the manner that we had kept some targets for the tourism incentive program. You will recall that at that time, it should have been around February, the Auditor General had been editing a second draft stress plan and APP, which we had at that point developed in November. And by the time we had finalized and tabled the current version, those matters which they had brought to our attention, which in the department we were already dealing with, had been corrected. So with regard to the SMART principles, the department takes that very seriously. We do rely on the assurance providers, both internal and external auditors, to assist us in ensuring that we meet the basic requirements in terms of the privilege, and thus far they have agreed with us that we do that, we have done that successfully. That is true.
Furthermore, Jefferson, I think one of the other useful documents in this regard is your indicator description document, which then outlines certainly in this indicator the following things, this is what we're looking at, this is where we want to get them. So that should also be read in sync with the APP. There are projects that were in the previous APP, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, which you will not see in the current APP. Part of the reasons why we did that is because in inverted commas, it almost amounts to what you call sandbagging in strategy terms, but which basically is just, it's cheating, because it's giving the impression that we would have done so much when it's something that is essentially done in the previous financial year, and what is left is things like publishing or things like that. It's not the actual work. The actual work is already done. So those things for us are in the background. It's the things like your NTSS, it's things like your tourist guide regulations and so on. So they are complete, they are done. But going forward, it's a question of then getting the document to the public domain. And putting them into this document, and then it looks like, oh, first quarter, these guys have now completed these things, they've got all the greens and so on. When we know that, truly speaking, the work already has been done, and there's very little money that we're going to spend on that work, it amounts to almost not being open about things and so on. So we don't have those things in here, but they are all adequately attended to, and they are all actually going to be coming to Parliament, and these are matters of policy which will be addressing the members. I think already on tourist guide regulations is scheduled for May 20th or 30th, one of the 2 days. So we are actually going to bring in those issues, and we would actually go to them properly. And you would pick up that in what we are going to present, there will be a lot of outcome orientatedness. So you may find, take EPWP. EPWP is essentially a program of the Department of Public Works. So each department then implements its leg of it. But what is expected as a result of that is actually to what end, and that end is the jobs that are created by EPWP. So you will find that on that kind of thing, what we then target is the jobs. But we will try to demonstrate what is it that we are implementing to be able to get those jobs. But what we are expected to get is the outcome-oriented target that says, you've got this much money, you need to give us this many jobs, and that's what is expected then. That's what we will then have an aggregated picture, ultimately, that says, EPWP across the country, this is what it has actually been able to achieve. So that allows us to be able to fit that in terms of the outcome-oriented approach that we take. We work very well with the auditors. They are independent, but we work very, very, very well with them. So we do make sure that in areas that we really feel we need them to come in, and we must have a common interpretation, because for Honorable Chairperson, one of the most important things is we may have our own interpretation of the rules, and it may have a different interpretation of the rules. In the end, it doesn't help, because what we're going to be implementing is not what they would be looking for. So we always make sure the relationship between ourselves, the accountants general in Treasury, as well as the AG, it's got to be maintained and it's got to be solid. So that helps us with most of these issues, some of the things that we're talking about. We are still driven, by values of being innovative, and this includes internally not stifling levels of innovativeness from the start. So some of the ideas that you see here, I can safely say, it's not things that are necessarily coming from these colleagues here, at least not even from me. That I will be the one to say upfront. It's things that are coming from the organization. So we are slowly cultivating that culture so that we actually are able to get as much as we can from them. But also outside, there's a lot of ideas. We'll do our stakeholder outreach, when we do our provincial outreach and so on. There are things that come up. Even when we are here, there are some traces of things that we've discussed that, okay, this is something we've been discussing. We are seeing some traces of it and so on. Especially when we go to issues of transformation, you will start picking up that, okay, there's a particular direction that has been taken that relates to some of the deliberations that we had in the committee. Ethics, no compromise. And the tone is very clear in the organization. Be it when minister is in business with staff, or be it when we do our own outreach with the staff, there's really no space whatsoever for compromise on ethics. And the consequences are well known, well communicated, and in instances where we find that there's a problem, we have dealt with those kinds of things. So we are quite serious about this one. Customer focus, this is everything. It relates to embracement of the liability principles. It relates to our service delivery improvement plans, which DPCA is very happy with, in the manner that we have actually done it and so on. But we keep on improving on these things, because these are areas that we believe would actually take us far. Internally, we are driven by issues of empowerment. This relates to people being able to also make certain decisions, of course, within the confines of the law, but also making sure that people are developed and making sure that they participate, there's space for them to really participate in the business of the organization, and they grow where possible, and so on and so forth. But growth does not just mean that a person is promoted from level 2 to level 3. The manner in which people have the level of comfort to be able to pick up an issue. So we always make examples with our deputy directors in the organization. Our deputy director, we can send them anywhere, in the country, outside the country, and have the level of comfort that they will represent the country and the department in the manner that all of us would still be very proud of what work has been done. Integrity, that we don't compromise, like I've talked about issues of ethics there. And this also applies to our suppliers. It applies to our partners. So transparency, transparency, transparency. In this area, we, as a brand, almost everything that we do goes through Manco, goes through Tomani. There's no, nothing that goes underhandedness and so on, including systems internally. So when you're talking about specification committee, it's a totally different animal from bid adjudication committee. Separate things. So we've got systems that really give us the confidence that things are working well and things will work well going forward and so on. So those are some of the things. And we do recognize people that are actually doing proper work. Honorable Jefferson, you also raised issues pertaining to financial related and so on. And in particular, some of the things related to travel and all those kinds of things. You talked about 14.1 million. We have, firstly, we have applied cost containment measures quite probably at least more than what is really required. The reason for that is we streamlined our business processes and the actual business itself. If you look at the delegations for international travel, we've been doing this thing of what the person is going to do specifically, what the president was saying about motivate, what is this person going to do, what is that person going to do. We have actually implemented this. And the levels of our delegations is lean. So that part of how we have actually saved. But we also have our issues, the CFO will talk to you about that. We also have a very old fleet, which we don't want to find people that have gone to serious things out there and finding themselves stuck because they did not have their requirements and so on. So tools for trade, that is part of what is going to be used for and so on. But we will continue to do this cost containment. I think four or five of us are staying in a hotel, including myself in a hotel where we are paying about 1,100 or something. And it's about when did we book as well. So when we know that is coming, then we actually do that. So you bump into the corridors, with everybody there. And that's what it should be. What we are looking for is a place where we go to sleep and then we'll go to work the following day. It's not really about the travel. So these are some of the things that our chairperson, we quite serious about. Because we believe that allows us to actually get money that we will be able to use to deal with the key business issues. We will expand on some of these things as we go into more detail. The mandate of the department obviously is still driven by the Tourism Act, Section 3 of 2014, and of course the National Development Plan. I will talk about the review of the Act at a later stage that we are actually going to be focusing on. The National Tourism Sector Strategy, obviously. There's no vacuum, that's something I should also mention. There's no vacuum. We do have an NTSF. So the review that we are taking does not leave a vacuum. It's an existing document, and we are reviewing the same document. So that document that will be published, it just sharpens the focus in terms of, it looks like within the context of the environment we're in now, the following 5 as opposed to the following 15 is what we must now deal with. But we'll give you more details as we then come to that particular briefing, which I will say, Honorable Chairman, when time really allows, as early as possible, we would love to do that particular briefing on the NTSF. The white paper, which is still relevant today, I mean, the only thing that when we look at it and we say that's one or two issues that we still could look into is technological issues now because the environment has changed with regard to that. But all those things that we talked about then, 20 years ago, they are still very relevant even today, so we will still be moving in that particular direction. So what are the priority focus areas for the department? First and foremost, Honorable Chairperson, is the issue of transformation. That's really the top of the agenda. Of course, the minister has a council, and the council really drives most of this work. So at some point, I suppose, that level of interaction to go in some of the details for that would actually emerge. But we believe, Honorable Chairperson, that in this area we are not going to succeed without strong partnerships. So there is going to be very, very strong partnership here, amongst which would include your development finance institutions, so that we are able to get particularly the financiers on board, so that when people actually are going into particular initiatives and so on, we'll be able to deal with it. And there are some good things that have already started happening here. You would recall, Honorable Members, we came here, we said, we did a research, we found that the representation of black women at management and executive level, as well as board level, was not adequate. And representation below those levels was in abundance, but when it comes to the levels that really matter, decision-making levels, it was highly inadequate. And as we said, we are going to try and intervene. I think I can share here that the specific project that we said we're going to do, which was the executive development program with business school in the country, which would target black women that are already in the management level, but middle management level, that would be empowered sufficiently to be able to take advantage of opportunities that come at senior and executive management level. That is now materialized. It was launched 16th of March by the Deputy Minister. It is done with the UNISA Business School, they might call it the SBS. We've got about 23 people that actually are going to be doing this year. But they're coming from industry. So industry says, no, in our group, we've got this person, high potential, middle management already, bring that person. And then we're able to carry those people to that particular. And it's going to be very interactive, very, very interactive. It's not just sitting in the classroom, and it will bring in experts from the industry to say, how do I actually do this thing inside the business itself? Because what we want them to understand, they already understand operations because they work there, but they don't understand the extra business. When I do this operation, what does it end up becoming about the business itself? So that's what we did with. We still have a task force on research and knowledge management and analytics and so on. Collaboration here, yeah, a lot of collaboration with SAT as well, but across with provinces as well and so on. Skills development in the sector. Our view here, and we'll share, these are accredited skills development programs and so on. And would really, our view is that we would like to see people becoming professionals. Now, as I go through these things, you will see that whether it is TIT, whether it is some enterprise-related partnerships that we may have here, those have become the tools to be able to arrive at these big issues that we want to see. Coastal and marine tourism that should take place, sector transformation that should take place, research and knowledge management that should take place, destination development that must take place. Enterprise development that must take place, and then some of the regulatory interventions which I'll speak to, and then we've got responsible tourism which also I'll flag. Now let me start with policy issues that I was talking about, what are the planned policy initiatives. We just highlighted this in here, but not the detail of because we have already completed, but because it's going to be something that gets implemented within this particular period. We will say something about the National Stakeholder Forum and so on, which basically the TSS is, that is the clearing house, that is the driver of the implementation. So the one which we must flag, there are two in fact, because these are matters of law. The regulations for information, call for information. What we are saying is that we really want to have a good sense of who in this country is in the tourism industry. We must have this big database that we know in this particular district municipality we've got so many products, so many rooms, so many attractions, and so on and so forth. That allows us, even when we deal with planning for interventions or planning for abort mechanisms and so on, we will know precisely what is what. And that will take us quite forward. We were looking at, as an example, we were looking at back operations. And when people talk about back operations, often people would think every back operator probably is tourism. And we're saying, how do we separate those that are purely tourism and have a discussion with them about matters pertaining to tourism, as opposed to scholar transport, normal commuter bus transport, and so on and so forth. So those are some of the things that we believe this registration would actually clarify properly. The second one, but which has been, is the full review of the Tourism Act. In the context of the changing strategy, in the context of the review of the NTSS, in the context of the environment that we are currently operating in. And the issue here would be, we need to look at the underlying policy issues, but we must also look at potential unintended consequences of an inverted commas over regulation. So if I could put it as an example, just put it as a question mark, would it make sense perhaps to actually have certain categories of training, not necessarily training, professional of services being professionalized? That's just an example. Would it make sense for us to decide to say certain categories should be licensed? But all of these are based on in-depth deliberation, interaction with industry. We must get to the point where we are able to confidently say we're clear what is definitely going to work before we actually put it in draft law. So that process is actually going to be what we are actually going to focus a lot on. I would like to address some of the issues that Robert Sherrison raised before I actually pass on the baton to the program. We have a number of projects that you would find that the level of dependency will require us to go into a very lengthy process of planning. Very, very lengthy. We have other projects that we clearly see immediately that if this project is executed by an entity, it would actually yield fast results. And that's something I would like to elaborate a little bit on. So I'll give you an example. When you get to things like tourism enterprise partnership, the tourism incentive program, you would find that we would want to, on the market access, for example, we would want to bring in all these SMEs. Now, these SMEs, some of them would like them to actually access market platforms internationally. But there are also market platforms in the country. Such market platforms might be going forward, might be a domestic tourism show. It might be INDANA. It might be Meetings Africa. Those happen to be, as an example, this the one that I was talking about, the INDANA or the Meetings Africa, they are owned by SAT. So when we take people to that, SAT there then becomes something like ITV. It becomes something like WTM, when these things are actually happening in London or they're happening in Germany and so on and so forth. So what we then do to be able to get those people in there, we make sure that we've got our terms, and these are the things that we want, the grants that we want, these are the people that are actually getting into this particular pool, and this is the training they must receive prior to getting into that, this the meetings that they must have and so on and so forth. Then we make SAT an execution. And they are our entities, so we will have to use them from time to time a lot more for things that we believe they can best be achieved if an entity or agency type of approach has actually been used. Similarly, when you look at the rating issues, the best way to be able to deal with it, instead of us sitting at NDT Pretoria there and we get applications, process applications, take the applications to FAT, FAT still looks at it, and then it becomes status. So we have to work smart. That's really the essence of this. And then we have to bring in the entity and say, this is what we want, these are our deliverables. So we don't want to get to a point where all of the person, there is sort of a confusion with this money that we want certain specific objectives in mind to be delivered, confused with the generic work that they do in terms of their marketing or the generic work that they do in terms of the grading and so on. It's causing a service provider, if we could call them that, but it is because they are assigned that responsibility to say who would like these things to be executed and the best mechanism is this. So you will find a lot of those. Then you will find the Honorable Chairperson in terms of projects that are these large-scale projects that relate to destination development, some relate to SRI and so on. They are prone to change from time to time, whether it's matters related to third parties, matters related to communities, matters related to all those issues. We try to factor as much as possible when we deal with risks, but eventually those things change. And I'll give you an example. In Robben Island, we go there, we start doing our KIA and so on on a particular site originally identified, and then the scientists say no. Thank you very much. That site that you've identified, it's not supposed to be that. It's supposed to be there. So what do? You stop the site. You go to the other site. When you get to that other site, you start getting into the details, EIA and so on and so on. Oh, no. There's a few penguins just around the corner there. You need to make sure that whatever model you use here must accommodate those penguins. Then you go back to the planning and say, okay, this is. So they take time. They take quite a lot of time in terms of actually planning. Some of the projects you plan ahead. So projects that we are in the planning phase, we will not see here. So we plan. When we come to Parliament and we say, this is because we have actually determined that this is something that is going to work. So that we don't come here and make big announcements for the public, ultimately when you voted for the money, and then suddenly, no, unfortunately, that would not work. So that level of planning that goes into these things, I think we should take that into account. Other issues that we should also take into account. PIP is somewhat in what we call infancy state. The reason why we are using that technology is that PIP didn't come from the DTI. Let me put it that way. What happened was, upon cabinet deciding that tourism is master plan the NTSL. That was 2011. There was a process within DTI that said this NTSS is not really ITEP. It's NTSS. This is for tourism. So they reflected on that, and after reflecting on that, they then came to a decision that they will not be continuing. Because they're not going to get the money in any case, but they won't be continuing with the tourism incentive and such. The one that they had was for expansion and so on and so forth. When they stopped that, they had commitments, and those commitments were 2, 3, 4 years. So we didn't get a cent, not 1 cent came to the Department of Tourism for that program. So we started from scratch, from ground zero, and we started from conceptualization and so on and so forth. And at that time, first year of trying to do this, it was within domestic tourism. That was the first year. But at that time, Honorable Chairperson, you would recall, we were dealing with significant issues with regards to the SRI, the EPWP projects and so on. We're running around police cases here, forensic here and so on. And that was the problem that was actually dealing with that, this domestic problem. So, piling up of these things in the same place, trying to have fresh thinking, fresh approach. I was still responsible for policy and knowledge services. Fresh approach, fresh thinking, it was impossible. They were not going to be able to do that because they were clouded by the things that... So, we then placed it within the problem that Ms. Chetia now is responsible for. That was to make sure that we could start on this. And it had no resources, no people. It had no people. So we had to start afresh. The thing that we had received from the DDI at that time, it was three people, Benny, Mariska, and somebody, and Kavani. But they were not in the incentive team of DDI. They were not. We pushed one person from there with the understanding of DDI to assist us in terms of starting the director responsible for it. They were in what we call the DDI tourism unit, which was the so-called DDI tourism unit that dealt with the policy issues and so long, long time back, small unit there. But they were not dealing with incentives at all. So we then had to start afresh, set up the systems, build this thing, the propositions, the regularization, getting Treasury to advise on some of the financial flows and so on and so forth. And that's where we started. So there was a bit of a learning process there. We can never stop learning, so we are building on that, and we are going to share with you some of the things that we are looking at, but we're also looking at issues like how can we also use this for transformation, how can we use this for better accessibility and so on. So those things we are looking at in totality. But these are some of the fundamental issues around this. We are actually seeing some good results, if one could put it that way. Some good results that are starting to emerge. The spread of the people that are actually participating in these things, I will not mention their names yet. I think we would need to get some permission from them at some point to say it's so and so. Off record, I can tell you who they are. But without mentioning names, you've got businesses in Limpopo, you've got businesses in KZN, businesses in the Western Southern Cape, you've got businesses in Gauteng, businesses. So these applications coming from across the board. Provinces are also assisting in terms of popularizing this system and applications coming forth and indicating areas of interest and so on, which ones they would want to participate. We're going to strengthen this center. The last year, we supported over 60, I haven't looked at the latest figures, but we supported over 60, and we're hearing very good stories of deals signed in China, of deals signed in the Americas and so on and so forth. When you go to places like the Americas, we sent one lady to Las Vegas for one of the events, based exhibitions and so on. 2 days ago, at the Allegheny Hotel in KZN, she was actually hosting some of the people that actually came from that particular session. And these are operators that are intending to actually then bring some of the meetings they want to have and so on. And so some of them are associated with the African American associations, like some of the people that we've seen in the country recently. But these are people that want to actually bring these meetings into the country. So this is what it is, and the return on investment, preliminarily, what we are seeing, just way, way above what we could even imagine. Because it's a question of sending this person once or twice to a particular place. And if that person gets just 5 or 6 deals of people on the other side that are prepared to bring people here, you can't begin to imagine how much is the return of that. Because it's not just bringing people today, it's bringing people today, tomorrow, and the day after. So it then becomes some sort of a permanent relationship. So we're basically just setting them up with these people, and then after that they're able to carry it forward. SAT also is quite instrumental in making sure that when they get there, the systems are well facilitated in terms of them being able to have those meetings, how to negotiate and so on. But we are also going to strengthen on that in terms of training them when they get there, so that there's no issues of language barrier, and also understanding the cultural dynamics around what the market on the other side is. But we want to grow this even bigger. So we then, Honorable Chairperson, by and large, the review of the organization will then determine the process that we are undertaking. It will determine the best homes for different programs, be it AAP, be it enterprise development. We have good sense of where the proper fit is going to be of different things. They may not even be called domestic and international and so on and so forth. They may not even be called policy and legal services and so on and so forth. But we are doing it scientifically with assistance of the experts who represent the DPSA, Secretary of the Particular System. So ultimately we'll be able to say this is it, and then we will give adequate comfort to the chair and the member. The last thing that I wanted to talk about, the chairperson, is our working relationships, as well as the work beyond just the scope, you see. I'll start with the work beyond just the scope, you see. If you take, for instance, Anemi Malan's work area, the international, there will be a lot of things that you will not necessarily see in the APP. They take so much of their time. So much of their time. We do a lot of work in the RAB region within the Tosa. A lot of it. We don't control the agenda. We don't control the timing of the session and so on. So it's not something we would put in here, but it's something we are open about to say this is more that we also do. It's routine work, it has to be done. But it is not necessarily something you would find featuring in there. Normally you would find it featuring in either minister's forward message from the DM or even in my administrative space where I've put in some of the things that we do. We do work with the United Nations World Tourism Organization. We do work with the OECD. We do work with the UNWTO, which is the African Minister's component of the UNWTO. So it's basically the African Union inverted commas tourism chap, if one could put it in that way. So there's a whole lot of work that we do around the regional integration. There's a whole lot of work that we do around multilateral collaboration, cooperation, and so on. There's a lot of work also that we do around bilateral implementation. But ours is about the outcome of that. So if we say, as an example, that we are going to target the training of Mandarin and orientation of some of the people that are in the industry on the Chinese culture and so on and so forth, we will use that bilateral cooperation. When we find, as an example, this travel, when we accredited the Chinese companies, it was because of that. We had a very good relationship with the Chinese based on the agreement that we have got, that is signed at a bilateral level. And that agreement enables us to access certain information that allows us to be able to say, now we are going into this particular direction. And they then provide the support. So we use the same when we're dealing with the Namibians, when we're dealing with the Zambians, and so you would not necessarily find implementation of bilateral agreements in there, but it is what we get out of that. There is also things on their side that they would expect of us to do. Last year, as an example, we had the Brazilians here, and they wanted to learn how we deal with ecotourism. So that's part of the implementation of our ITRA agreements. But it's not something that would necessarily feature here. So those are some of the things, and the idea, and I was sharing this with the colleagues, is something that we probably would need to come here and share with yourselves, from the chairperson and other members, the kind of things that we do in the international space, so that you've got that totality of this picture. Otherwise, if we put it here and we say, March, we're going to have UNWTO General Assembly, and the Secretary General, who is somewhere here today, in city somewhere, in some event, and we then say, no, he cancelled it. A session of ministers has, no, they cancelled it. The talks that they cancelled it. We come here, and we would be giving you excuse after excuse. So those are, what matters is, are we creating those jobs? that matters. Are we growing that industry? That matters. Are we reducing that importance? That matters. These are the kind of things that they would really go into if they go through all the things that we're talking about. So that I thought that we should try and do to just demonstrate. We work very well, I must say, that we work very well with all the provinces. All the provinces. The colleagues are on first name basis with their counterparts. I've got all the cell phone numbers here. I get phone calls from yesterday we were pushing the select committee, and I was giving an example. Ironically, the member comes from the province where I received a call the night before from the HOD from that case, and some of the things she was asking about were things that relate to what he was raising me about. So we have that level of relationship. Good attendance of the technical support team for MINEC, good MINEC, well attended, and so the intergovernmental system is working. And this is why even at a horizontal level, we were able to actually reach the kind of agreements that we did with Home Affairs. So in the cluster systems, we were able to actually bring our things, and these are things like the NTSS and some of the regulations, and these things are also going to go through that system. So that the other colleagues also don't come back to us and say, we see you've got that law, you see you've got that strategy, and you're talking about us, why, what's wrong with them. So we also make sure that we bring them on board from the very beginning. They serve on technical committees that are actually developing some of these documents, so that tomorrow is not something that we just impose on them, it's something that they will have to. We'll deal with some of the other issues as we go through this. But we are guided by the outcomes fully. We have, in particular, outcomes which relates to economic growth, related issues, outcome 7, which relates to rural development-related issues, and we've got outcome 11, which relates to international-related issues. And those are what I would call the mandate-related bread and butter. And then I always make a statement about outcome 12, which all of us here, it is our KPI. So because it talks about governance, it talks about good systems, it talks about making sure that we run things in the manner that they should run. I will stop there, Chairperson, so that I can give the colleagues an opportunity to take you through the plan itself. Thank you. Program 1, yeah.
Thank you again, Chair. For Program 1, I would say that in line with the previous comment about the revised strategy of the department, Program 1 hasn't seen too many changes in what we are expected to deliver. Program 1 is the administrative program. We are still responsible for financial management. We are responsible for legal support. We are services support to the organization, communication support, performance management, and such. So the changes are not necessarily in what they are supposed to deliver, but maybe how we are this year attempting to assist the line function branches to deliver their mandate. So Chair, you will note that the first indicator there relates to the performance management work that we do. There we are responsible for planning, all the planning requirements, meeting at minimum the submissions in terms of the prescript, but also other working supporting the departments to the line function units to kind of clarify their plans. The reporting also in terms of the requirements, including the annual report and all the quarterly reporting to Parliament, to Treasury, to the Presidency, is managed in Program 1, as well as the risk management to ensure that any risks identified are mitigated, any risks to our objectives are mitigated. And the second indicator, Chair, is in our support to the ministers or site responsibilities over our one entity, South African Tourism. We provide him an integrated report on how SAT is doing in terms of performing against the mandate, in terms of how they are managing the financial resources, whether all their governance systems are in place. Between the governance units, the CFO's units, and the Policy and Management Services Monitoring and Evaluation units, we coordinate information to minister to allow him to intervene where necessary in terms of safety performance. The next four indicators checked, and we had asked ANZ to deal with our HR strategy. It's not everything, but these four, number 3, 4, 5, and 6, in our attempts to implement that HR strategy. We are managing the vacancy rate. We need to ensure that we recruit the right people at the right time vacancies become available to ensure that the organization is able to deliver its mandate using the human resource capacity available there. With regard to number 4, where we have responsibilities around ensuring that our employees and the statistics in the department meet the employment equity requirements in terms of the Act, the 7 Act, we ensure that at FMS level there is minimum 50% women, that people with disabilities are recruited. We have a target of 3% in that regard in our staff complement, and as well as ethnic representation in terms of what the economy-wide targets are for employment equity. In indicator number 5, what we did with the chair is ensuring that once we have recruited and people are in the department or as we recruit, that we continue to provide the right skills for the organization, continuous development of our people, to grow them, but also to provide the necessary skills for the department. This becomes quite crucial this year as well as next year as we go through this process of revising our strategy, as DG has indicated. So we need to ensure that the human resource capacity matches what the skills required to implement the strategy is. And we do this alongside the issue of revisiting the organizational structure to ensure that we have organized ourselves well enough to meet to be able to deliver the services that we have identified. DG has indicated that there is quite a long administrative process that we are working with the DSA on, which requires us to say once we have identified the objectives that he has dealt with, the focal areas that he has indicated as what we are setting out to do in this medium term, we then are clear about now in sector transformation specifically what role must we play, what services must we deliver, and therefore who do we need in the organization to deliver this. And then you will see the organizational structure changing in order to be able to support the new strategy. And again, that is a long administrative process. We have set ourselves the target of implementing a new organizational design by 1 April 2017, which gives us this year to align. We have the strategy now. We must think about the structure, and we must build it into the budgeting process that starts in June with Treasury, because we can't have an organizational structure that doesn't look like the budget structure in terms of rules. So we have to time it appropriately, and that allows us then to implement by April 1, 2017. That process departs from the new strategic focus of the department. With regard to number 6, we have a responsibility to ensure that the relations within the labor relations within the departments are healthy. The employer and the employee, it's a healthy relationship where there are cases to manage. Those cases are managed in terms of the requirements, resolved in terms of the requirements, and that is what we target for in that instance. All of those are in support of our strategy, of our human resource strategy for 2015 to 2018. We review it annually. I would like to emphasize that key from this strategy is this realignment process to support the new strategy, which means we must, with the current staff complement, we must ensure that the current staff has the right skills and is placed appropriately within the organization to deliver the new strategy. The next thing that we are responsible for, Chair, is to ensure we have an information communications technology strategy aligned with the prescriptions as well from the PSA. We have to ensure that as far as possible, the services that we provide as an organization, internally but also to our external clients, are ICT enabled to improve how well we provide that service. So as DJ calls it, this system that is governed by this strategy provides the backbone for all our ICT provided services, including our website, including the knowledge portal, and some of the portals that we are now going to be developing around HSBE and impact development, which the other branches we deal with. That is the work that we deal with under that ICT strategy. We are also responsible for ensuring with the CFO, we are responsible for ensuring that the financial management and budget management processes are in place, are completely aligned with the performance with the Public Finance Management Act, and all our obligations in terms of how do we deal with the public funds, how do we report on the use, how do we disclose on the use, and are managed under a. So what because of how we must express our targeting. We cannot have a target, for instance, that says manage finances. It must be specific. What are you going to be able to see? And therefore, the work of producing financial statements really builds up from the work that happens throughout the entire year from the CFO's perspective. We are also under Program 1, having an internal audit system. The internal chief executive auditor reports directly to the DG. Key responsibility in this area is providing assurance for our stakeholders and an early warning system to the accounting officer and the manager where our controls are not working as they should. So she picks up on the risk register. Where are there weaknesses in the control environment within the department, and brings that to the attention of the department for the department to correct and strengthen. And that environment provides some assurance to the DG to say where there are weaknesses that the management has a responsibility to correct. That program also is under Program 1. DG has emphasized here how dependent the tourism mandate is. We take seriously our participation in the intergovernmental relations system. So particular focus for Program 1 is coordinating our participation at the Forum of DGs, South African DGs, which is the FOSAC, as well as Kenneth coordination, where we must ensure that we keep sight of what is going on in the cluster system, who is bringing what type of policy, and what is its potential impact on tourism. So we keep sight of that, and also on the things that the department is, on programs that the department is driving, where will we need support from the broader national department, and we bring that into that FOSAC system, particularly for DGs who may impact on a program that we're trying to drive, for them to see that yeah, this is how we are intending to move forward, and therefore see how well those other departments may support our agenda in that regard, so that work as well is coordinated within Program 1. Oh, and DG has emphasized as well how important it is for us to communicate first our mandate, but also our programs for two reasons. Maybe more, but the two that I would like to highlight now are if all those who impact on our mandate and all those who impact on our programs do not have the right levels of information to understand how they can support or how their actions and their decisions impact on our mandate. But if they don't have that information, we can be assured that the success rate of our programs is not going to be so much. So we want to make sure that we really communicate our programs, our mandate to others so that they understand what we are trying to achieve and how they can support it. But more importantly, we want to communicate our mandate and our programs and what opportunities arise from those programs for the people of South Africa to be able to have access to those programs. Imagine if we are saying today to Parliament that we are going to be having an incubator to support tourism enterprises and nobody knows about it. How do they access the opportunity? So it's very important that under this program we drive the communication to ensure people are able to access all our programs. And under Program 1 Chair, we also have the Tourism Complaints Officer, who is our Head of Legal Services as well. So the management of the tourism complaints in terms of the Act sits under this program as well. DG has raised the issue around what we want to do to review the current Tourism Act 2014, the responsibility of Program 1 in this regard, drawing from the policy positions that Land Function and Delivers recommend, is to coordinate anything addressing that may become necessary, should become necessary. That is the responsibility of Program 1 in this regard. And then, here we are also responsible here for in terms of the tourism complaints officer, to just clarify for users what is the procedure for lodging tourism complaints. And the way this year we wanted us clarify the procedure and publish it for users to be able to use our service in this regard. And finally, Chair, as a public service department dedicated to the economic development of the country, economic empowerment, including economic growth in the sector. From a Program 1 perspective, we have a duty to ensure that where we are spending public money, we spend it in a manner that drives triple B in the public, in the country. This is not our tourism sector money. This is where we are using the 2 billion allocated to the department and our entity SAT to procure in a manner that supports the transformation imperative in the country. From wherever we are buying, whether we are buying chairs or pens or hotel bookings, we must support the imperative of transformation. Chair, I hope that on the issue of the HR strategy, I have clarified how we are driving implementation steps. Thank you.
Good morning again, honourable members. I'm going to take you through the policy and knowledge services, which is Program 2. Program 2 largely deals with our focus areas of sector transformation, research and knowledge management, skills development as they pertain to the guiding sector, as well as the regulatory intervention and responsible tourism. On the APP for this year, we have 8 targets. The first one really talks to the National Tourism Sector Strategy, which remains the guiding document for tourism. And the target there really is related to the National Tourism Stakeholder Forum that we host. The purpose of the forum is that it keeps all of us in the public and private sector on track in terms of delivery on the NTSF. It allows us the opportunity to have conversations where there are challenges and obstacles. And it allows us as a sector collectively to move forward the programs that we have set out in the NTSS. The next slide talks to the issues related to what is pertained in the Act for the National Tourism Monitoring System that we are putting in place. The DG did allude to this earlier. This system is actually the Act actually compelled us to put in place an information system for the sector, and this relates to all of the information that we want to collect. It is going to be an extensive process of consulting with the industry, and it is a collaborative process of agreeing with the industry what would go into the information system, the regular reporting and collation process, and how we actually monitor progress within the system. I think very closely aligned, and this is something that is very important for us, is transformation. It's an imperative nationally, and the work that is being done in the department. I think last year you were aware that the Charter Council was established and the new tourism BEE codes were implemented. So the first two projects really talk to the Secretariat function to enable the Charter Council to complete the work that they need to complete, and primary amongst that work is plan around transformation of the sector. The second set of work is really important in order for us to understand the baseline that currently exists around transformation in the sector, so that we are working from the basis of evidence-based implementation. So the second project is really looking at what is the baseline of transformation in the sector and setting the targets for where we want to be down the line. The third project is a practical one in some ways, and so it's giving effect to our conversations about how you match SMEs in the sector with people who want to do business. So this work is being done through a portal which allows us to match businesses which are SME businesses with people who actually want to connect with them and provide businesses to them. So those are the three that actually talk to our question around transformation. Thank you, Namzamo. The next one relates to tourism guiding, and there, in this area, I think broadly what I'd like to say is that there are three targets related to tourism guiding. The strategy in the department is to try to focus where we can within public institutions. So that would be looking at our World Heritage Sites, our national sites of significance, as well as state-owned enterprises. The first program is really looking at the program for World Heritage Sites, and it's a pilot program for guides into World Heritage Sites this year, which will of course be then expanded towards all World Heritage Sites through the NTF. The significance of the guiding program is that guides are actually the people who help to tell the stories that are uniquely South African. Guides are very important to the process of a visitor experience. And so it's very critical from the perspective of tourism that the people who represent us and tell the story that are uniquely South African are well capacitated, that they are continually put through a program of continuous professional development, and that we are assuring quality. And that's really what the department is responsible for in the space guiding. So the first program addresses World Heritage Sites as a critical space in the country. You will, of course, know that there are only 8 of them amongst 80 on the continent, and I think just under 1,000 in the world at this point in time. So they're very important, significant spaces for the country to be able to have our tourism offerings. The second set of targets around guiding talks to a training program for new entrants. So this is people who are bright and eager and who are starting their career in the guiding field. And this is about growing the guiding profession, but beginning to set up a program that professionalizes them. And the third program that actually talks to guiding is about a continuous professional development program. So it's a requirement in terms of the Act that guides are continuously put through a program where their qualifications are assessed. To date, there have been very many different programs that have been put in place. But I think that the National Department wants to put in place a single program that allows them to go through something that is accredited, aligned to technical qualifications, and that allows us to ensure quality assurance in the space. The next set of targets really talk to the Tourism Incentive Program, and I think that the DG has provided very good background contextualization to the TIP program. DG, I can talk from being on the other side of being consulted. I think before the TIP program was actually put in place, there was extensive consultation with provinces as well as the private sector about what would be the key areas that needed to be targeted in. These discussions happened in 2014. I was part of those discussions as a representative from the province at the time. And the key programs that came up consistently as requiring support was the market access program, the program that deals with grading, and the third program was retrofitting to address the costs of tourism businesses. So those programs weren't thought up by the National Department at the time, and I can testify as a stakeholder on the other side. The incentive program, as the EG has pointed out, is a program in its infancy. It was launched in March 2015. So we have had now a year of implementing the program. I just want to provide a little bit of detail to the background of it. So within the market access program, we have DG to add to what you provided, supported 80 businesses to access various markets. But that was not the total number we received applications from. We went through an extensive process of outlining the criteria for eligibility. We received 145 applications for the market access program. 59 of those that we received didn't meet the strict criteria that we had set out. The market access program, I also need to say, is a progressive program. So we support, we provide support and funding support at different categories of support, and we are not providing that support forever. We are doing it in order to enable people to understand the value of that. We have put in place a sustainability model that will then allow people, once they have realized the value of it, to actually pursue these opportunities by themselves. I think that we're going to now do an extensive return on investment investigation, because we have had a year of implementation, in order to assess. And I concur with the DG that the return on investment is far more than we actually have put in real money terms in this year. In terms of the grading, we put out 7 calls for proposals through the year, last year, to just over 5,500 establishments. It has been a partnership with the Tourism Grading Council of South Africa, so we haven't embarked on something that is different. But we have provided different relays to the program. We had 206 applications last year, and we had 159 that were approved, and others which really didn't meet the criteria again. I think that we are a little bit concerned, because this was one of the areas that collectively the private sector and the public sector said was very important. And for 5,500 calls to actually only 2,006 applications is something that we are in conversation with the Tourism Grading Council about, to try to understand the reasons behind the low uptake for this particular program. So I think, once again, we're going to use those lessons learned last year to actually refine the progress that we have. And the retrofitting program focused specifically, again, on state-owned entities in a pilot last year. It was really looking around solar energy, photovoltaic panels, and that really is about understanding that tourism is a consumer, and that we need to reduce both our consumption of renewable resources, energy being a key resource, and the second issue really being that we need to be responsible in terms of cutting costs. And so we started with state-owned entities in the pilot last year, and we are going to actually continue with the program this year, again based on evaluation. As the DG pointed out to you, the projects that we list are not the only projects that we're working on. The reality of infrastructure planning in my last life is what I did, is that infrastructure planning is a 14-month planning cycle. So from the point that you have a project to all of the planning work that you need to do and get the necessary EIA, HIA approvals to commencing a project, you can't shorten that time, and it's 14 months. So at this point in time, the projects that we have put on the table, and there's 3 of them, are actually projects that have had a lot of pre-planning done. And we are convinced that they are projects that we are able to implement in the financial year. Similarly, there are projects that don't appear here that we have commenced planning on in order to be ready to implement in the 17-18 financial year. The projects that we've highlighted, there are 2 of them that are in the Kruger National Park. They are elements of construction. Those have been targeted because they exist in the poverty node areas. So the idea around infrastructure is really that investment in infrastructure leverages other investments from the private sector, but it creates jobs both in the construction, but it creates jobs beyond that. So that's really the logic of these projects that we have at Kruger National Park. And the third project is the National Heritage Monument Park Interpretation Center in Swane. So those are 3 big projects that we are doing for this financial year. The last project is a very critical one for us, because what we need to do is to create, as I explained earlier, a pipeline of projects that we actually start with conceptualization all the way to planning, feasibility, and implementation. And so the product development master plan is really about creating that pipeline which we can progressively implement through the MTS. This is, of course, a process that will be done in collaboration with local government and provincial government, who are the owners of the assets. And very critical for the product development master plan is that we are looking at enhancing the products that actually exist. We are not talking necessarily about the creation of new products, but we are really looking at the products that exist in the space. From our previous life and conversation in infrastructure, South Africa actually in many instances has very good infrastructure. One of the challenges that we have is the maintenance of that infrastructure. And so this also will require us to have a conversation with our partners who are in art and culture, for example, in the Department of Environmental Affairs, who actually are the owners of assets that are in fact tourism products. so that we are then integrating the work that we're doing, not just across local, provincial and national government in the tourism space, but that we are linking the work that is being done across government by various other departments. Okay. We're on the next slide. Thank you, Nomzamo. I think we've spoken to the incentive program extensively. We are continuing with market access, tourism grading and energy efficiency. But we are sharpening our pencils in terms of what we've learned over the last year and in terms of improving those processes and making them much better. Universal accessibility, we'll know, is also an imperative. From a building space context, but also from an experience context. So from the universal accessibility perspective, we are now developing guidelines for what needs to be done in the space in order for us to inform a program around, an informed program around universal accessibility. Again, we are integrating what we've learned around the current incentive program to inform what will be done around universal accessibility. So the lessons learned are going to be very valuable for us going forward. Our next project is a very strategic project. It's really looking at the state of tourism report. And this year we want to develop the first state of tourism report. This report will include where we are. It will include where we are in terms of the rest of the world. And it will also articulate what the business case is for tourism. So we're really excited about this. Some of the honourable members may be familiar with the Safe Environment Report. So it's a similar kind of reporting, but for the tourism sector, and it's the first time that we're doing it this year. The next two indicators are talking to how we actually communicate with visitors. We are actually looking at mobile applications being developed for our visitor information centres, as well as a mobile application for tourist guides. And this is really something that allows us to have a conversation with visitors. It is again addressing the conversation about how we enhance the visitor experience in the country. And the very last indicator is really talking to the National Tourism Information Gateways. So if you talk about visitors' journey, a visitor actually starts their journey long before they get here. So their journey begins with their research about where to go. They then actually might get onto a plane, a train, a car, they might even walk. And in that interface of the journey, there is signage, there is the ease of getting around, there is people that they meet along the way. We interface with visitors in a variety of ways. There are online platforms. There are actually, some people prefer paper like me. Some people actually prefer all the information on their mobile devices. But the National Tourism Information Gateway allows us to interface with visitors face-to-face. And these two, there's currently one in operation at the O.R. Tambo International Airport. We are looking at working partnership with KZN to enhance the one that is at the Kinshasa International Airport. This is a really important space for us because it's the physical space that allows us to have a conversation with our visitors. It's also a space that allows us to get feedback from our visitors in terms of what is going on, how was the visit, etc. So that, I think, is the very last one. And I think with that, I'm going to hand over to Anna May.
Thanks, Shamila. Honorable Chair, honorable members, I think you would have realized that plan for International Tourism Management Branch looks a bit different from the previous year. And the main reason behind it is just a realignment of the work that we are doing according to our priorities as lifted in the beginning by the DG. I also wanted to allude to the fact that there are a lot of work that we are doing that is not in our plans necessarily for the reasons that DG also lifted. So I'm not going to add to that. Speaking to our targets specifically, you would realize that our first PPI speaks to the skills development priority, where we will do 5 years of skills development in the current financial year. The first one speaks to cross-border guiding, a module that we want to finalize, and especially with Namibia. A lot of work, preparatory work, has been done in this situation in the sense that we do have a bilateral partnership with and relationship with Namibia, together with research that was done by the University of Pretoria through our PKS branch, and that has informed us to include this target into the current financial year. So the research, together with our bilateral relationship, is assisting us in moving this target forward. The second opportunity speaks to language training. The need for this language training comes from the demand. Specifically, tourist guides need the first priorities for tourist guides were Russian and Mandarin. And we've added frontline staff to Mandarin based on the need from industry. The reason why there's a difference in the two processes is that work has started on Russian training in the previous financial year. Groundwork, negotiations, plans were put in place in the previous financial year as a pilot project for language training, whereas the Mandarin will be the second language that we will train tourist guides and frontline staff in, and that will also be based on lessons that we learned from the Russian training. The third one speaks to the placement of chef learners, and this was specifically in Seychelles, and I think that also relates to what DJ was saying, you know, you can have a bilateral agreement with a country, but what is the outcome? Now, this is one of the outcomes we are going to, through our bilateral agreement with the Seychelles, give chef learners the opportunity to be placed in the Seychelles. Fourth and fifthly, is some enhancement work and research work that we will be doing. The fourth target especially is looking at best practices in the world and benchmarking how they do capacity building programs for their provinces and municipalities so that we can learn from that experience and in future also improve how we are doing it in South Africa based on experience from the benchmarking exercise. The last one, and did you also, with regard to skills, did you also alluded to that, is that we want to improve on the way that we do the market access component of the PIP program in the sense that we want to make sure that there is comprehensive training before the trip and comprehensive M&E and debriefing after the trip. So that is the last skills development target. The second PPI speaks to the enhancement of our tourism offerings, and we really need a tourism investment master plan to assist us with that. We need to know what is where and where the areas of need are. So that is the aim of that target. Thirdly, the accreditation of tourism companies is a recommendation from the Immigration IMC as well as Cabinet, and subsequent to that, we as the department agreed that we will take the responsibility of the accreditation, and we need to roll that out. As DG said, it's done in China already. It's not necessarily in Russia anymore. And in India, the situation on the ground also at this moment is something that we are looking into in terms of the prioritization of the ABC program in that country. But we need to roll it out to other countries as well, where we are. And then lastly, speaks to our objectives around regional integration and a better Africa, and that is where Minister Hanekom hosts the ministerial session at Indaba annually. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members. I'm going to deal with domestic tourism management within the department. The first project that we are going to deal with is on the review of the domestic tourism growth strategy, which was done in 2012. Mainly the strategy seeks to ensure that there is an increase in trips within the country. We inculcate the culture of travel.
we develop products so that people who come to consume them, they are satisfied, and as well as ensuring that we contribute to the GDP. And on the side of SAP, they'll deal with the marketing. The other project that is, I won't say new, because we started first 3 years ago on the project that is on social tourism, so that we promote open access to selected government-owned attractions for targeted groups. We'll be dealing with four groupings, that is the youth, the elderly, people with disabilities, and our special groupings. What we've done was to engage Sun Parks and some of the government entities so that they can discount rates to allow the majority of these people to be able to visit the attraction. We have come up with a directory which will be distributed to the groupings as we engage with the various people on this one. We are sure that as we start popularizing this directory, other entities will also like to come to the fore, and this will also assist us to ensure that our people also have an opportunity to travel. The following, the next one is on enterprise development. The Director General has indicated that our partnership with PEP ended this year March, but the function that they assisted us with is continuing, which is enterprise development. We are coming up with a fresh kind of an approach where we are going to ensure that there is integration in terms of development and support across the value chain within the tourism space. We are going to come up with two incubators. One will be in Elandsberg, supporting Mukwase Township, supporting Muruleng Township. And it's an approach where we are saying we need to support them on site. It's not going to be an incubation there that is a physical structure where they are taken to, but we assist them on site so that we are able to see what's really happening and give the necessary support. What we have come up with is a panel of, I'll call it, service providers, which will be mainly ensuring that whatever needs that arise from the SMMEs really will be able to assist. The service providers within the panel are 7, and this will also allow us to have a wider reach and diverse expertise, which our SMMEs will be able to tap into for a comprehensive support. We'll continue to support the 100 rural enterprises which TEP used to assist us with, and if they further need some incubation that will assist. We see the incubation methodology going to help us to have more of these SMMEs, but at the same time, they will be able to also give each other support and establishment around. For example, the one in Bilans, but we know there's one city around, so they'll be able to also tap into those opportunities that will be coming from those which are established. In terms of capacity building programs, we'll be having 8 programs, and all these programs are mainly for job creation and making sure that the youth are employable. Our bias is towards rural areas within the poverty nodes, but these poverty nodes should have the potential for tourism. The first will be on the chef. We'll be having 577 trainees on the chef program. It's a professional kind of a program. It's not just the cookery and it can stay. For year one, it will be on an entry level that will be able to give them 30 to 60 credits. On year two, it will be a certificated training on accommodation services and food beverage, which will also be on NQF 2, but now going on to 120 credits. And on year 3, it will get diploma in either accommodation or food beverage. And this will be on 260 credits, which will be on the level of NQF 5. Some of these learners have been permanently employed even before they could finish employment. This showing that there is an uptake in terms of the training that we are providing. and some of them they do on a part-time basis. Yes, we will have some others dropping out, because the thing that we need to take note in terms of giving service to people, the attitude really comes to the fore. If one is not committed, the attitude is not right, he or she is going to affect the service excellence that we really want to see within these premises. On the hospitality service training, which I've already alluded to in terms of the professionalizing of it, 2,000 learners are going to be trained, and these are spread out equitably within all the provinces. The following monitors will be on food safety. There will be 500 in number, also across the 9 provinces. And the food safety one is to ensure that as a country we are food safe, and this in a way will increase our competitiveness going forward. The following project is on local government tourism induction with a focus again on rural areas with potential. And the 8 district municipalities will be targeted for this current financial year. It's the same forum that we have started 2 years ago. We'll be continuing adding new district areas. The other one is on the tourism human resource development strategy review that we started last year. On the phase one is the issue of doing a skills audit, which we are finalizing in May, and then we'll start working on the strategy going forward. The MTPE is also an old project. We are now in Free State, started last year. We will be doing that again even the next financial year in the same province of Free State. And number 8, in terms of capacity building, is on the 20 black women that the DD indicated that is in partnership with the business and development within the UNISA institution. Under enhancing tourism offerings, we have 2 programs, which we started with the 2 attractions, Robben Island and Manyani Game Reserve last year, in terms of ensuring that service excellence, the standard, is being implemented. And already for Robben Island, we found that there are some good things that are coming out of this intervention. We will be adding the Golden Gate Islands National Park. All in all, we will be having 3 in terms of service excellence, the implementation thereof. The other project on enhancing tourism offerings is on finalizing the 8 World Heritage Sites in terms of interpretation signage. We had 3 last year. We managed to do 2. One, which is the Free Airport Dome, we couldn't simply because the province has not yet started to erect, but already the contractual issues have been done, and we said we cannot transfer the fund until we are sure that the work has been done and we have monitored the erection of those sites. In terms of 2 programs that we need to make sure that we have the numbers in terms of employment, we have come up with a new one. It relates to the ocean's economy, the Blue Flag program at 50 South African beaches. It will be able to employ 210 people, and the certificate that will come out of that interaction, it will be in environmental education specializing in tourism. This is in partnership with WEFA. WEFA is an environmental entity, an NGO, which has been doing this reflect for some time within the country. Currently, we are busy in a laboratory to come up with marine and coastal tourism projects. This is an exercise that will indicate or report to the committee going forward once we have what needs to be done outside of the lab that is currently happening. The other new one is on the infrastructure master plan. The main aim here is to make sure that The three shape of government, when it comes to infrastructure, it's very clear who's supposed to be doing what. I can give you some example in terms of the innovative finance that we are doing in the AIDS World Heritage Sites. If the road going to those sites is not in a good condition, we may not even start to do those signs. At the same time, if the directional signage also is not done, we may not find ourselves really assisting in terms of our tourist reaching that place. So we are hoping that with this master plan, it will be clearly outlining the model that all of us as government should really say these are the things that we need to be doing, especially related to attractions within the country. The last one is on EPWP FRI. The target for this year is 3,448. Last year it was 3,008. At this point in time, we are at 2,978. We have a figure of 68 for the month March, which is not yet verified. Once it's verified, it will outline whether we have met the target or not. But we are hopeful that this 68 is really the actual figure, and then we'll be able to submit the annual target. For this 3488, as the DD said, that we are looking for the jobs, but behind the scenes we have infrastructure, we have this training program that I've indicated that needs to contribute to the FTEs. We have 27 projects that are under implementation now, but this year can change simply because we have training in the bedroom. Once the project is ready under planning, then it will shift into implementation. For those that are under implementation now, we have 15, and for the projects under training, all in all, what we have now, it will be 12. But what we need to take note is that we have the chef, we have the tourism body, we have the food safety, we have the wine service appreciation, and blue flag as well. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. You will remember previously when we submitted this by the Cost of Hours, you requested the department also to include the 15-16 financial year, and we did that. So you can see that we do take note of the portfolio committee and the request in my class. To indicate you, and this is the first time that our department exceeded the 2 billion rand budget, so we are very proud of that. you can see that in our four programs as it is now, administration, if I only focus on the 16-17 financial year, you can see that it will achieve 11.8% of the budget. Policy and knowledge services, 63.3%. You will know that policy and knowledge services include the transfer payment to our public entities and tourism. We will get into the detail of that. And then also include our EIP program. International tourism, 2.7% of the budget, and then domestic tourism, 22.1%, which includes our EPWP projects. If we look at our economic classification, the next stop on that. You can see that our compensation of employees is 265 million. This is a limit that has been given to us by National Treasury, so we're not allowed to exceed that limit for the compensation for employees. It's 13.2% of our total budget. And then our group services is 405 million, 20.2%. Transfer payments, 1.2 billion. And then you will see our capital assets is 112 million. You will see that there's a big increase if you look at the previous financial year, 15-16 to 16-17. It was, our capital assets was 0.3% and now it is 5.6%. Now the reason for this, Chairperson, you will remember that we did not have guidelines from National Treasury on the allocation of our EPWP projects. but we knew that it's going to come. So this budget was already divided into the guidelines as we received it on the 10th of March. So EPWP is now classified as follows. This is a training project. The training itself is classified as goods and services. The EPWP salaries, the wages, that is classified as transfers to households, and then the infrastructure project itself is classified as a capital asset. The next one is Program 1, Administration. It's got the Ministry Management, Corporate Affairs and Office Accommodation. You can see that our biggest budget there is to our Corporate Affairs, 65.9%. And I think that from Program 1 you heard what all is included in Corporate Affairs. If you look at the economic classification, the biggest portion there is the compensation of employees, 54.9% of that budget. It's a question that while we're on Program 1, I can just take you back to your question which you raised with regard to the 14.1 million. If you look in the E&E document, you will see that 14.1 million served to Program 1 administration. That was a reclassification according to SCOA, where we took up an allocation from the travel and subsistence and classified it under that transport provided for Department of Activities. So in effect, it is actually part of our travel and subsistence budget, so it's not a new money that we receive. If we go to Policy and Knowledge Services, you will see there is our transfer payment to SA Tourism, just over 1 billion rand, 80.5%. And then our Tourism Incentive Program, 188.9 million, is 14.8%. And the economic classification, there you will see that the biggest portion of this is account for transfers and subsidies is 1.1 billion or 89.4%. International tourism, and in international tourism, the Americas and Western Europe, we've also got a transfer payment that is included in this to the UNWTO, it's 2.5 million, right? And then Africa and Middle East, there's also a transfer payment included for a TOSA of 3.8 million. The total budget for international tourism is 54.7 million. On the economic classification, you can see that the biggest portion of the budget is for compensation of employees, 17.6%. And then you can see, as I said, the transfer payments is 6.3 million rand. Okay, then the next one is the message tourism. See, I think that just to give you an indication at the last line there under the sub-program, you will see that strategic partners in tourism is indicated there. But as the DG has said, it stops, has stopped already at the end of this, the previous financial year. And in the next MTF, this sub-program's name will be changed. You will also see that in the current E&E document, there is already under transfer payments, it has shifted, and it will refer to various institutions, small, medium, and micro enterprise development. The biggest portion in the budget also is on the social responsibility implementation, that is our EPWP projects, and that amount is 386.1 million, or 86.8%. On the economic classifications, you will see that under recent services, there's a huge increase from 1516 to the 1617. The reason for that is exactly the reclassification of the EPWP budget. The only portion which is still left under transfer payments of the EPWP is the EPWP incentive. because when we do the budget, that portion we cannot allocate to capital and to goods and services at that size. So that we will do in the year, and we will adjust the budget to do that reclassification as the expenditure continues, because the EPWP incentive money, we can only draw that money from public works and it's related to progress on the department side. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, questions? What type of questions?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. On the very last slide, 51, can you highlight for me what is capital assets? And on the MDEF baseline domestic tourism. And you know, the both of us are serving in the Portfolio Committee of Public Works. And Chairperson, the EPWP resulted in Public Works getting a qualified audit report. What I know from this committee is their work on the EPW on the dot. Because I'm asking this because EPWP is very important in the lives of all South Africans, and it reached the poorest of the poor, and it's really a lifeline. And I request you to be that where they use these funds for EPWP, they must make sure that everything is according to the pickups of the agent. Chairperson, you say on slide 43 that compensation for employees is limited by Treasury. How do you come about? How do you do increases, yearly increases, and requests from your staff for higher wages? How will you finance it? From which budget? If you are limited to that. Then, Chairperson, the program policy and knowledge services gets 63.3% of the budget. I would like to know from the DG, are there enough checks and balances in place to secure that this 63, that's above of the budget, is well spent, that there won't be any leakages? Then, Chairperson, on slide 39, I think it's program slide 39. Name there in our 2016-17 medium-term targets. You begin by saying that the implementation of tourism signage at the three World Heritage Sites are completed. And then in your 2016-17, you say you name a few of them. Do you have timelines? For example, site A, by then you must have it. Because I know there are a number of stakeholders involved, as the provinces, as the municipalities. How do you ensure that by the end of this financial year, that these signages will be there? Because this one of the things that this committee is very passionate about the signage. And everywhere so far that we have done oversight, there is a lack. And we think that contributes to the fact that we can't attract enough tourists. Then, Chairperson, I'd like the department to talk more about the marine and coastal tourism, other than just the blue flag, in their engagement with other departments such as Public Works. What have they highlighted?
what would tourism and KMC want to see in these marine and coastal sites?
KMC, as a previous time I've spoken about it, the municipalities, we would like them to name them to us. And Jefferson, there's a lot of training going to be. Training of the five tourism skills and other opportunities training. But the one thing I missed, if you train in 2016, for example, I'm just taking an example, 30 candidates for guys. Isn't it imperative that after the training, they must be an impact guy? Because you can't train young money and you don't measure the impact that it has. And when training guys, must tell us where the training is. Because training guys are supposed to be local, regional, provincial. We know they will be national. And how do you accommodate guys at regional level, for example? The accreditation of travel companies, I think that will be done in coalition with security and home affairs and that. And my very last question. The training in Russian and Mandarin of guides. In your 2015-16 program, you undertook also a training in French. How successful was it? How are you convinced, what convinces you that this training, although it is essential, will be successful? Saying that, Jefferson, because I know these languages are of the most difficult languages that there are. And you know, one speaks only a language by, only one learns the language by speaking it. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you, Chair, and thank the department for the presentation. Hope that it will assist the committee on the oversight side, to immediately do now oversight. But I've got a few questions from the presentation. On the program 3, you spoke of the recruitment of tourist guides and front line staff for language training. Will the three training programs be a multi-year project, and the recruitment will only be done in the fourth quarter for the Mandarin? If so, why only one program appears in 2017 and 18, and 2018 and 19, and does not reflect the current program? On program 4, again, you spoke of the implementation of the Blue Flag program at 50 South African beaches. So the Blue Flag Fishes Program aimed at facilitating the implementation of the Blue Flag Fishes across the country under the PPI6 of Domestic Tourism Management. And the program is not comprehensive enough to address the Operation Hakisa and the opportunities presented by the marine tourism. Will the department develop a comprehensive marine tourism strategy to tap into tourism development presented by almost 3,000 kilometers coastline of South Africa? On program 2, regarding to the Act, when will the department be submitting the draft amended Act to the Parliament? Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let us welcome the presentation that we got from the department. It's really comprehensive. However, I've got about four questions and two comments. The first question, I want more clarity on what is the cause of this underspending on incentive program. especially that it shows that it was there was underspending in 1450 in 1560. What was really the cause of that? And what are we going to have in place to show that in 1617 we don't have the same problem? In your day-to-day work in the department, you indicated that you are very, very passionate about the ethical issues. Is there any situation where the ethical principles were compromised? If there were, how did you deal with the situation? Transformation is one of the issues that are very, very moving at a very slow pace, especially in tourism situations. What are you doing to have a turnaround strategy around that one? Another report you indicated here, especially where you're talking about the lady was taken to Las Vegas and when coming back, she was able to host some people from the very same place. How many do you normally send in a year to go outside for this mission outside? And out of the ones that were sent outside, how many did really come back with yielding fruits? Are we really seeing ourselves winning on that one? The tourism complaint officer, I want to know, usually in maybe I can say how many complaints does he receive on monthly basis? Just maybe just to give us a green light, how many does he receive? Is it possible for him to resolve all the ones that he received? On the comment issues, I think indeed it is important that we must have the department coming to brief us on the international activities that they are engaged in, and this will give us a green light of what is actually happening, because as they said, most of them are not included in the reports because they want to be sure of what is happening. And I want also to commend the department for their vacancy rate to be 18%. I think it is good, especially in this era where we are seeing that so many people are unemployed, and also commend them on achieving the disability environment of 3%, because indeed we know that many departments are able to reach the 2%, which is a target for everyone in the country. Thank you so much.
Honorable Cromwell.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to ask a question which is not directly on a presentation, but which underpins everything that the department is trying to do, and that's about cooperative governance. And I raise this issue because it's been very frustrating for me trying to do my job as a constituent MP and trying to assist my residents in getting things that are absolutely obvious done, but they never get done because cooperative governance doesn't happen. So you're not sure because you're from the same province as me. I'm gaining consistency or I'm gaining mentality, and there are a number of tourist resorts. The most famous now, quite many, the Nelson Mandela Capture Site, of which exorbitant funds have been spent, mainly from Coca, and where there are up to 13,000 visitors every month to that particular place, which enjoys a very, very special status in most of African people's hearts. The work's gotten at Mardin, such as it is at the moment of the trust, and we've got the Howick Falls. 4 years ago, or 3 years ago in fact, I wrote to the minister and asked them what could be done about the signage to those rules. It's obvious. I mean, people come from all over the country, they come down to N3 or up to N3, and there's no sign telling you where to go to the Nelson Mandela Capture Site, or the Howick Falls. A year later, I got a response. Eventually, after working through every single government department possible, it turns out there's an interdepartmental committee involving the Department of Transport and the matter is receiving attention. A year before I wrote to the minister, the local Harik tourism people had already asked the local municipality to actually look into this. So you've got the Department of Tourism, you've got the municipality, you've got the Department of Transport, and you have these various NGOs that should be working together, and they're not. A couple of months ago, the NPTC organization cut funding, in fact cancelled all the funding, to an NGO in Howard, which is promoting the town. So now we don't have any tourism in the town that's supported by staff, and they were employing people who are young and poor, come from the townships. First time in their lives, they were doing real remunerated work and doing a lot of good for the community. They no longer have a job. And so not only do we have a situation where it seems practically impossible for government departments to work together to bring tourism into that particular place, to honor the legacy of Madiba and to create employment opportunities, and in fact going in the opposite direction, they're cutting funding while they're not offering. And it's creating greater unemployment and it's increasing the sense of hopelessness in Howick, for example. And that's what I get the solution when I see these presentations, because you get a warm and fuzzy feeling about how much is happening. But the reality of the situation on the ground is that in fact it's not happening. And I know that as someone who is very involved in my constituency and spends a lot of time at tourist resources to try and find out how it works, who funds it, does it actually have a payback, is it worth the investment? But what you can't put a price on that as a person is the dignity that people need to have in their lives because they have gainful employment and a sense of utter helplessness when they lose their jobs because there is no governance and there is no cooperative governance between the various government departments. It is actually shameful that it's taken nearly 5 years to put a sign on N3 because bureaucrats are arguing with each other, showing where South Africa can go to see when Nelson Mandela was captured. It is shameful. Particularly since they're spending up to 120 million rand on his monument. I mean, we went there as an oversight thing not so long ago, and you can see it's a huge, huge project. A test, no signage. So what I wanted to ask the department is, if the politicians can't get it right, can at least the officials get it right? The DG and other people in the department, do they have a working relationship with DGs in other departments? Is there a kind of professional staff sense of working together to do the right thing, not just for tourism, but basically in the interest of everybody? Can you give me some kind of hope that I can take back to the four young ladies that have now lost their jobs? That in fact, you will be talking to people in the Department of Transport and in Cogta, and you'll actually get this thing organized. It's taken 5 years. Otherwise, I don't understand what these wonderful plans are, because I don't see it. I see things going backwards. As much as you say these things are happening, there's other things that are going in the opposite direction, and it's what you're not telling us that keeps people awake at night and actually keeps a lot of young people hungry at night because they don't have money to buy food. Make me feel more positive about what you guys are doing. Tell me what you're doing with working with the other departments and people at all levels in other departments to unjam these log jams. Make my day.
Yeah, this is trying to unjam the log jams. From this committee, begin to talk to your counterparts.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is just a point of interest. When one listens to the initiatives by the department of training people out there to be exposed to this tour guide as well as the chess and others. Chairperson, my most interest is with regards to taking actually the same subject of tourism, or pushing it to the country authority in an early age, rather than people only getting exposed when they are already in the institute of higher learning.
if our young people would be sort of exposed to the subject of tourism, I'm sure we would be by now having more of them being in search of tour guides. You could go out to the world areas where maybe in places of historical importance, you find that it's only the people who are exposed to the tourism in the form of tour guiding are not actually the people of the areas. It's very, particularly very insulting to see a person from down come to tell people, to tell the tourist about what is the history of the area where I come from. What actually the people that live there conducted their lives. So the point that I'm trying to put forward here is that of maybe seeing that at least at a primary level or high school level, the subject be taken there so that our young people could be exposed to tourism. Secondly, the issue of assisting in developing our own residents in rural areas. People coming from the rural area. We see tourists coming by buses and in and out. We have people who are well established in their own homesteads, which I feel should have sort of been invited. If the department could maybe do some bookshows to the rural areas where actually tourists are mostly visiting, to have those people being exposed to convey their homes into BNB so that those people who are coming to the areas could even experience how life is. If, say, a person from America or from Russia or wherever, overseas countries, would have slept in a beehive hut where there's no tiles, no cobra polishing, where we use cow dung to sort of polish our beehive hut, as they are called beehive hut. Those experiences would maybe sort of, in a way, improve the way of living for people who have lost jobs in the mines, lost employment in different areas of employment. They are now at home, they are sitting there without any income, only relying on selling their livestock for the support of the families. But unfortunately, the drought is hitting them hard these days. They cannot even rely on the livestock in order to sell, just to buy groceries for their families. Those are points that I wanted just to mention. Thank you.
Honorable Adam. I forgot to ask. In under program 1, they mentioned that they undertake several endeavors. Can they tell us where these endeavors take place? Exactly, slide 21. It's part of your communication strategy. What is the message that they communicate to the communities? Do they really go out to the communities that need this information?
Thank you, Jefferson. DG and your representative and your colleagues, I can't agree more with what the honorable members have been raising, because there's the reality out there. Indeed, you said you are a department that is working collaboratively with others, but there are many, many problems where tourism is somehow involved and where tourism should be doing things or could be doing things, but mainly dependent on other departments. For instance, we were briefed by HSRC this year, and they said, I'm not sure whether it's people from Holland or people from that area, prefer to use B&Bs rather than hotels, prefer to use to go rural rather than in the cities, and those are the real concerns of South Africans, made worse by natural disasters. But what role can you play then to influence, among other things, your counterparts in a small way, to a big way? For instance, the Nelson Mandela capture site, were also shocked and surprised that the people from the surrounding areas were not getting any employment or any work in that distance. And people were bringing their own people from Johannesburg, from Cape Town, and they were working at rural, semi-rural place with people surrounding in Hawick, which has got the Mid Madame, which tourists flock to time and again. Not because I'm from the Natal, but it's an issue which we observed during our oversight visit. Thank you. Oh, before you respond, the hospitality industry or accommodation, whilst we talk about the issue of accessibility, are they all accessible? Or if it is possible, who can be responsible to ensure that is taken care of from tourism or whatever partner that tourism has to look into that? Because it's a necessity if you want tourists from all over the world to come here, they're not the same, but they want to be to tour the country. Thank you. And you.
Honourable Chairman, thank you very much. Honourable members, we are going to try and take all the questions properly and elaborate on them. So I'm going to allow the CFO to start. There are questions about classification, financial related issues. There are questions about systems in place in terms of accountability, KWP issues and so on, and all the questions that also relate to, so when salaries increase, what do we do? And so when we need a high level of capacity, what do we do in the confines of what we have to live within, as far as the fiscal are concerned at this point in time. So that's one of the areas that you will cover. Then there's questions that pertain to training, and I think those questions should be shared between a domestic and international. And so they will travel. All of them will come in from time to time on those issues and so on. There are some questions that I should attend to, questions around marine and coastal tourism and what is being done around that, questions around the questions Pakisa and so on, questions around the expenditure, and I think I'll deal with that with that question. But then ethical issues in the department and broader, how we deal with those. We take note, I must say, we take note of the observations that Papa Kumbuk made. We are aware that there is need for improvement across the system in terms of how we get these things right. And it relates partly to the last question that Honorable Adam actually raised. Because it's a question about, so when we do this outreach, we go out there, who are we talking to? Are we talking to industry? Are we talking to municipalities? Are we talking to everybody that is in that particular value chain? But what we really want, I mean, even the thinking at the time when we were saying we've got domestic tourism focus, the thinking was that there's going to be a lot more of these things actually coming directly to us and say, we have an issue there, we have an issue there. So it's a question of communicating how that open door policy allows people at that level on the ground to come in. But we'll speak a little bit more also in terms of so how trying to close that gap. So I could just share a little bit on that. Besides the normal structures, all these normal structures that we've got, MINMEC, MIPEC, and so on and so forth,
the cooperative government, the cooperative, the, what do you call it, the constitutional, no, the fact that this is, it's a white mandate, it's a concurrent mandate, it's a concurrent mandate. So what happens is, we go out to provinces. We share our plan with provinces. We get some info from the provinces, they list out some of the things and say these are all the areas that they believe are critical for them to be actually to be dealt with immediately. And I think that is where we also rely a little bit on, as you do oversight and you actually pick up some of the things there, as we go out, we try and bring some of these things. As we do the outreach in terms of the reason that we are doing, we pick up some of the things. They must come back into the plan. So there will be some things that we will not be able to do. That happens from time to time. But the things that are actually brought in, that's why now we are talking about, there are three specific projects that are in this plan. We are talking about a broader plan that will deal with product development. We're talking about a product development master plan. The participation of local government into that, the participation of local industry into that, the participation of associations into that, the participation of provinces into that, will clarify what kind of products are supposed to be given an immediate attention across the different provinces. The second project, then related to that, is the infrastructure master plan, which is then going to be able to say, out of all the things that we have got, these are most immediate things that we are supposed to deal with. So this comes from that background. Then we will know where are the areas that they need to be prioritized. The last one is what International is going to be doing in terms of the benchmarking exercise of what actually makes a winning local government with regard to tourism-related issues. So that we've got this model that can be applied by any other across the board. But we'll have to make sure that Talga is really in the cooperative governance and traditional affairs is really in there. When we have this model, it actually would be able to apply across the different sets of municipalities. But we are obviously seized with the challenges equally. And we do believe that there is a lot more that can be done. Of course, within the confines of the resources. So we will have to do a serious prioritization, mega attraction, the site that Honorable Kongo was talking about. It's a mega attraction. It's a site of significance in the country. And those are the kind of places we are saying, if they're actually in this product and infrastructure master plan, and also the model that deals with what we're going to do within the municipalities in terms of how they actually reposition themselves, all the things will then be able to actually assist us in that particular regard. But this is something that we do take quite seriously. The issue about this expenditure, which I perhaps should deal with right up. The year before, 2014-15, yes, there were cuts that were applied across the system. Honorable members would recall this is the time when all of us were going through a load sharing issues. This is the time when we were going through fast tracking of the infrastructure related to energy and so on and so forth. We equally got how much? 78? Yeah, we also got cut by that 78. They found it when they came in, so they took it. We don't have another expenditure in the year 2015-16, we don't have that. What we learned, our lessons were, some of the things that we need to do more detailed planning on, that's why we don't put them yet. We will put them at a time when we have actually tested that these things are actually going to materialize ultimately. So it is the learning as we go. We have got commitments as we go now. So they, and what we have learned also, part of the lessons that we speaking to DDI and Treasury and so on, we have learned that this thing works differently. It works on commitments, and you must be setting commitments. An example, if we were to go into say, an incentive for transformation, it must be based on the fact that you know already that the 15 applications that are approved by IDC or approved by NEF or approved by FIFA, that requires so much money that would then incentivize them to be able to actually unlock whatever capital funding that they wanted from this institution. If that is not in place, it means we would keep on chasing and chasing, getting applications, and it becomes a little bit tedious. And we have learned that there are other things that can be done in a much more smarter way, as opposed to actually going to some extremely intense processes, which in the end will yield exactly the same results if you have actually gone for an approach that is a lot more straightforward and easier and so on. Ethical issues. We deal with souls. So we've got people that from time to time will err. We had an instance of a demotion. I'll give that as an example. We had a demotion of a person who did not necessarily acquire the benefit that the person attempted to actually get. So the person was using the office to gain certain favors from industry. It came to our attention. Industry reported this to us. We investigated, we went through the process and so on. The person pleaded guilty to this. So what allowed him to do that was because he had the authority to find something. So he moved from a director to a director. So those are some of the things that the organization knows about this. So the message goes, and people know that there is this direct consequences that would apply to people that actually deal with things of the state in a particular manner. Honorable members know that some of our suppliers, when it comes to EPW projects, some have been arrested, some have appeared in court, and so on. So we really deal with this in a much more harsh way. We don't take it lightly at all. But I'll give the colleagues to talk to the other areas.
Thank you, Jay. On the question of the capital assets on domestic tourism, yeah, there's a steep increase that was 0.2% in the previous year and now 23.8%. The EPWP project, the infrastructure project, gets classified as capital. So that means if we're in the process of constructing a lodge, anything that's related to the construction will be classified as a capital asset. So it will be work in progress in the year. Once it's completed, it gets onto our departmental asset register, and then it gets transferred to the owning agency, and then it gets taken off the department's asset register again. On the compensation of employees, what happens is National Treasury always includes a percentage for salary increases. But there's usually been salary negotiations. But even if it turned out that the salary negotiations, the pop or the official get a high percentage, then the difference will usually be given to us by National Treasury in the adjustment budget. On the 17-18 year, the department has already been cut on the compensation of employees. So from this financial year, we already need to work on our compensation of employees to see that coming the 1st of April next year, we will be able to stay within the 274.8 million, which has been allocated for the 17-18 financial year. What they also give us is the total number of employees. We cannot exceed 530 employees. Now, currently our establishment is more than 530. So now, as a post now goes vacant, we've got to assess that post and see, can we mostly fill that post, or are we going to abolish this post? So see that we can remain within the 530 limit as well. On a question related to policy and knowledge services, the amount given to SA Tourism, we do have controls in place to monitor our transfer payments, because as you correctly indicated, it's a huge 63.3% spending, but we work very closely with our public entity SA Tourism.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. Yes, the ICT program is in partnership with Department of Home Affairs, but we take the responsibility of implementing, but we are bringing all our stakeholders on board. The training in French is not really training in French, it's training of FET educators, chef educators by the French. So it's again an arrangement that we have through a bilateral agreement with France that has been identified, and they will be training the FET and specifically in Mafeking, the trainers, the chef trainers. In terms of how do we want to make sure that it is successful, the training in languages, as I said, the Russian will be the first one. It's our pilot project, so I'm sure we will learn lessons from it. What we did put in place is to make sure that it's not only training in the language, but that the trainees will also have a placement in the country. So that while they learn the language, they also experience the culture of that country. And we hope that will also assist us in the success of the program. In terms of the multi-year program, the multi-years, Honourable Member, I'm sure the targets will also be re-looked at as we go, but the one speaks to the Mandarin. The one that is in the next year speaks to the Mandarin. That will be a flow over from the current year.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. On the issue of interpretation or interpretive Spanish in the World Heritage Site, do we have plans or implementation plans to guide us who's supposed to do what way? Yes, is that first with an MOA or a contract where we sit with the relevant authority to say this is what we intend doing in your space, how are we going to do it, and that one gets signed off so that it's clear that we're supposed to be doing when, by which time. The problem comes when they are supposed to procure so that the signage is produced, the erection and all those works. The matter is we give them the specifics in terms of what type of material to use, where to erect the signs, guided by them as well. You find that there is a delay in terms of the procurement, hence finding us not being able to disperse the funds as indicated that you'll transfer, simply because we cannot transfer until we can see the work that has been implemented. On the failure for the other area that delayed the negotiation, it's traversing two provinces, Northwest and Free State. In terms of the talks, the meetings, Northwest didn't come quite often. But at the end, it was a question of, you know what, Freda, for 90% of it is in our space, but they're signing the contract with Free State. Because Free State showed the commitment as well as wanting to ensure that we do put the signage in the Freda form. So we do have the contract, we do have the plans together with the authority. On the issue of rural areas seeming not to benefit on tourism-related issues, with specific, I would say, homestay, in terms of Honorable President Gule has put forth. As a department, we did go for a tour, what do you call it? Study tour in Malaysia, to understand how they do their homestay, because it says they are the best in the world. And I think we learned something out of that talk, and what we realized that we need to guide as a national department in terms of the framework. What are the things that need to be there right from the beginning? As much as they'll be going into that beehive hut, there'll be simple things that we need to be communicating so that we don't find ourselves the good thing that they can benefit out of it becomes a bad thing. Hence our involvement in terms of an incubator in Bilansberg. When we went for that study tour, the ruling and the Mokwasi representatives were there, because already they have started it, on the houses where the young people have left. They are in cities. Only older people are remaining. So they want to start using their homes to be able to receive visitors. So it's starting to come out well. In Stadium N as well, the DMPs go there to see when they were launching their home state. But the main thing is for us to be able to properly give guidance what are the basic things that need to go into that space. I think from my side, yes, these are the two issues, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Responding with regard to the issue of complaints, the report I have declared end of February right now from the complaints officer. It states that in the 15-16 financial year, 34 complaints were received. 25 of those have already been closed. The 9 are still in progress. Generally, they tend to be quite a lot on the issue of refunds between a service provider and the complainant. Some are about whether the expectations of the tourist were met when there has been a transition between the two. You bought a room, a stay at a room, and when you arrived there, it wasn't quite what you expected. And there were two on lost items at an establishment and one at an airport. And so, but a lot of them tend to be around disputed issues around refunds. Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, I was hoping that the colleagues would deal with some of the issues, but I will say the questions like it, which the questions and the question that was raised, so I will deal with it. But I want to emphasize something on the oversight of African tourism. Honourable Chairperson, we have got a very good board. A very good board for African tourism. And we're quite clear about its role. So it does get recommendations in terms of the strategy of urban tourism from the board, from the executive within the agency, and they then made that recommendation to the board. The board approves the strategy, and then they recommend it to the minister. Of course, we also look at that in terms of whether this is in line with the mandate and so on and so forth. And they really, within the confines of the resources that we have and so on and so forth, they are doing what, from our side, we are satisfied. Governance issues around that, everything above board. We normally do a significant transfer up front to SAT, and this significant transfer is roughly even more than 50%. But we do that with the blessing of national treasure, because that is our way of trying to manage the exchange rate challenges and so on and so forth. But they've been really struggling with the exchange rate. When you look at the changes and the fluctuations and so on, and you actually try to see the things that they still have to do, it is quite challenging. So they keep continuously adapting. We exchange notes. We make sure that from our side, the things that are best done by them, their family, in that space, the things that are best done by us, assembly in our space and so on. But on accountability and so on, we don't have any issues. So you would recall SAT has been making a clear, very, I'm told there's no clean, something called clean audit, but they've been getting a clean audit year after year, and that's really the proof of these things. The oceans, marine and oceans, marine coastal tourism. We are going through a very in-depth screening process. And where does this come from? What happened was the initial ocean stakeholder had identified issues related to minerals, oil and gas, issues around coastal governance, issues around transport, small habits and so on and so forth. But as this work was progressing, there was a clear identification that marine and coastal tourism is not part of it. So there are two things that we are busy planning currently, which
include marine and coastal tourism, but it also includes the wildlife economy. Our part or our role in that relates obviously to the ecotourism aspect, but it's a partnership that we've got with environmental affairs. And out of this, we will be able to actually say there are 5 or 6 mega developments that are planned within this particular quarter line by private sector. They require the following to be able to unlock that kind of investment, capital, whatever it is. We will be able to say Municipal X has got the following plans that are actually going to be implemented in and around the coastal and marine environment and so on and so forth. So that is the process we are through going through now. You will see more of this starting to emerge after we've done all the feasibility testing and see and so on, whether certain things will then be implemented and so on and so on. Because we thought one day somebody says cruise tourism is the great area to get into. Another person says, no, don't get into it now because you don't even have any ship that is South African flagged that would be carrying these people. You've got ships that come here empty and they're taking people and so on. So it's not just work that is going to be done by the department only. You've got Transnet through Postnet that is also putting infrastructure already. And that work forms part of the broader marine and coastal tourism issues. So that is about ports that then become a lot more accessible and so on and so forth. But if there are emerging legal issues that require a particular shift and so on, whether transport department or whichever department, all of these departments I'm talking about are in that level, together with private sector, and they're actually going through these things in a lot more detail to say these are something to be done. Some of the things that are starting to emerge that you see, if you go to places like the Ado in the Eastern Cape, immediately there, when you go to the bay, immediately after the Ado, those are some of the best diving spots and so on and so forth. Question is, then how do we deal with this? Also issues of non-consumptive use of all these resources, whether it's boat bays, whale watching, shark cage diving and so on. So we've got all these scientists that will be able to say to us, you can't do shark cage diving in this place because sharks only come to this size for a very short period. They actually are found in this particular area. What type of sharks are coming into this area? How dangerous are they? Can you actually do this spot and so on? So we have that level of scientific information. Which areas are going to be protected or already were earmarked for protection and already kind of like ready for proclamation, consultations, and that. So that information comes in. We know that if somebody wanted to build a hotel, not necessarily yet. Some of the businesses that own most of the land, who are, I don't want to mention companies' names, but who are already in the coast and they own parts of that land which have got lease or that development, they're part of the participants there in terms of some of the things that are earmarked to be developed within such, so that they are actually part of whether this is where it's going, where it's not going. So we don't want to get into something that is not thought through properly. So the things that we would bring back to the committee at a later stage, we would be able to say, this is what is going to be done, why is it going to be done, who's going to do it, when is it going to be done, all those types of things. But it's going to be part of the broader questions that is, which already is the way into its implementation. Second issue that, third issue that I thought needed to be addressed is legislation. We are envisaging 2017, sometime in 2017, not it all come to Parliament this year, because we have got to deal with the policy aspect of it and make sure that we have got the initial draft that are going to go through the normal law reform process. It must go to the leader of government business, proper schedule and so on. But it must go through the classes, it must go through cabinet, it must go through the public consultations, it must then come to Parliament. Formally, it actually will only come after we've exhausted all those particular processes. Last one, I do take note of Gostorico's issues, particularly pertaining to how do we make sure that we capacitate people that are in these areas where some of the attractions are. We don't necessarily have somebody coming in from Johannesburg to come and provide guiding services on a site that that is in some rural village elsewhere. There is a recognition of prior learning process, which allows for people that really have indigenous knowledge about what is bringing people, the story that is bringing people into this particular area. And I think the most important thing would be working with the provinces to be able to identify for such facts and such people so that they can then go to that particular appeal and they are also able to actually get into this. I'm sure the implementation, Honorable Chairperson, of our code for broad-based like, economic empowerment will also assist to a point because they have an element that talks about empowered supplier. So this is when you are a supplier but you demonstrate that you buy from people that are also empowered. So that would actually bring some of these people into it. But we have to actually, in this outreach that I was talking about, find them, know about them, tailor-make ways of them actually getting into this. And there are some that are already there through the kind of processes, but not necessarily enough. So there is still a lot more work that we have got to do. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Thank you, Honorable Members, for being able to come to this meeting today so that tomorrow people will be more free. Thank you very much. And thank you very much from the department for being able to be with us today instead of tomorrow. Thank you very much. Honorable members, next week, if at all there is parliament activity, would like to have, Jerry will be sending to you communication around adoption of the agent reports that are going to be submitted into parliament. But we might be able to do this during a lunchtime break, just within an hour, Wednesday or Thursday. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, Bill. I prefer it this way. Stay on. Because the patient will try to do for the stomach.
For the whole stuff.
For the whole, forever. Forever. See you.
Thank you.